The Dave Good Show is a free-flowing, mostly one-sided conversation that is only intended for mature audiences. Community feedback and involvement is strongly encouraged. The Dave Good Show is made possible with the generous support of the Beehive Library and Archer Productions. Welcome to the Dave Good Show.
So, I'm hanging out with my conservative cousin, and we're watching TV right after the digital changeover. So, for those of you who are like me and don't have cable, you know that the feedback and the static became different in the digital changeover. Like, it used to go, or the picture just got steadily less bad. But now in digital, it's either perfect or there's like a pause. So, for watching sports, it's kind of preferable for it to get like staticky because you don't miss the action and the flow of the game. But if you're watching it digitally, there could be like a pause and I could get like, you know, or whatever, like the building could be about to blow up and then it could stop and then it could be blown up in the carnage and you could have missed the action. So that happens during the game. And my cousin's like, thanks a lot, Obama. Really appreciate the new digital television. As if the president is in charge of everything. And, I mean, there's a lot of, like, The Daily Show making fun of all of the Fox News guys who were like, it's not Bush's fault, it's not Bush's fault, it's not Bush's fault, like, all of the excuses that they gave, and now everything is about this, this is why it's Obama's fault. And so then, of course, I start thinking about myself and my relation to this, because I don't think I've had many conversations with anybody where I wasn't explaining why it wasn't Obama's fault. Because I appreciate his speaking, I like his fundraising strategy, because he's culturally similar to me, I am constantly explaining things as they're not his fault. And in the same token, I don't really know. I don't really know what he's up to. And here I am explaining away like it's not his fault, and it could be, even though I know, like I know the one true path to God, I know that it's not his fault. Anyways, whose fault is it? That's the question. Whose fault is it? Well, it's our fucking fault. It's all of our faults. Like, these are our leaders. This is our system. And if you just blame the system and you don't look at yourself, I mean, that's what babies do. Those are people that you don't want to work with, that you don't want to associate with when they claim that the problems are outside of themselves. And it's like, no, it's not Bush's fault for creating a stupid transportation system that you're late to work. It's your fault for being late to work. You should have left earlier. So it's all our fault. I mean, and I think all of these people who are like, man, why isn't Obama doing more for me? Like if some real activist, like someone who had engineered a real social change, like Martin Luther King or Gandhi or something was sitting next to you, do you really think they'd say, oh, well, you gave $250 to a campaign. Like you're done. Your effort is over. Everything should be fine now. I mean, you gave more money than you've ever given. And now you're just sitting on your ass, like, you know, sitting on your shit that you bought at Walmart and, you know, drinking your beverages that are in tiny little plastic containers and doing all the things that we do, looking the other way, driving everywhere, not getting engaged, also not doing the due diligence to understand the economic structure and understanding that your liberal whims, though they may be pure and true, you can't just implement that shit necessarily. You know, so just the, you have to look at yourself, and that's just a healthier way to be, that so that then I'm responsible. Like, I'm responsible for the political world that I live in. If I want to change it, I need to get active and change it. And then if I don't, well, this is my world, and it's my fault. You know, I mean, just like I had a conversation about science in relationship to the BP disaster, and I think that the amount the average American knows about science is atrocious. And so I'm talking to all these people who don't know shit about science, don't know anything about anything, and they're like, why can't they fix it, and why is this going on, and you know, maybe if we asked articulate questions about science in the lead up to the building of these wells, maybe we could ask the right questions and cause them to be built in a different way. But I mean, if you're living in a world of whatever refined musical taste and, you know, refined fashion selection, so you look like the proper working class fucking quasi-socialist, like, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? Like, learn something, do something. Get out there, be involved in it, you know, mess with it. So anyways, just to recap, it's your fault. I mean, I'm doing a news podcast, so I'm now cool. Because I think that Gandhi would be like, oh, you're talking to a computer, this is good. Like, what you're doing is now fine. you're basically the same as me. It's exactly the same as like facing real racial violence, like face to face with like people behind you after doing a hunger strike. It's my podcast is basically that. It's identical. I think the question that everyone is asking themselves about LeBron is, ultimately, would I have done what LeBron did? So, like, if I was 25 and I could make, you know, $10 million a year in Miami with my buddies, would I do it? And the consensus, I think, is coming around where everyone is like, yes, I would do it. I mean, I listened to this sports guy today. He had his buddies on and, like, they all love each other and they're great guys. And you were like, it made the pill, like, easier to swallow because it was, like, three guys who totally loved each other. And you're like, oh, I know what that's like. And, you know, would you go to Miami? And even though, like, now I feel like the country's opinion is kind of yes, no, I would not go to Miami. Like, who I really identify with, actually, is Ricky Williams. A guy who had the physical talent level of LeBron James. I mean, he was just the biggest, strongest, fastest guy I've ever seen. And he left the Dolphins to go to Australia and live in a tent and, like, learn about naturopathic medicine and smoke a lot of weed. And, like, that I feel like is, like, rejecting one set of values, like, for a higher set of values. Whereas LeBron took the, like, mediocre values of professional sports and was like, that's, like, too much of a moral framework for me. I just want to go to South Beach and be loaded, and isn't that awesome? And, like, that's not really what my life's about. Like, I've never had that kind of money, but, like, going to, like, the nicest place with the hottest people, like, that's not what life's about, right? I mean, we all know that. I think anyone who's, like, read a book or seen a play, the theme is never, like, go for the most, like, transient and superficial values. So, I mean, the question of what could you do, essentially, if you could do anything, I mean, I would do something completely different. And, I mean, and that's the thing about Ricky. Like, Ricky Williams took more heat, way more heat. Like, everyone's like, fuck Ricky Williams for leaving and going to, like, on his path, and he's crazy. And, like, you hear, I just recently saw this 30 for 30. Interesting, like, Bill Simmons produced a documentary about Ricky Williams, and that people ultimately love Ricky, but they're like, he's crazy, but he's crazy. Like, I don't know if my purpose is to carry this ball and run down this field. Like, maybe I'm supposed to be some kind of a healer, and I'm just confused by this. And he was just as every bit of the ambassador for football, and he did all of the, you know, the boys clubs and the kids things. And so for him to reject football for greater values, we're like, fuck that guy. But now everyone's like, oh, LeBron, whatever, I'd want to be pimping with my buddies. And, you know, like, how many women is enough? How much money is enough? You know what? And then, right, I hope this doesn't turn into just, like, some extremely egotistical Jesus trip, which is, like, where it goes. Like, you do that and then you have this crazy egotistical Jesus trip. So, I mean, I think ultimately I hope I wouldn't do what LeBron did, you know? I don't think I would. But then on the flip side, so, like, Cleveland, right? Everybody is like, oh, woe is Cleveland. Could there be anything worse than being a fan of the Cleveland Cavaliers right now? And, like, yes, there could be a lot of things worse. Well, one is, I mean, they got the Brown, like, they lost their whole team. I mean, that's worse. Losing your whole team is worse than losing a player. And this is something that I know about, because, like, my Iowa State almost lost their conference. Like, I almost got booted out of a league, and that's the shittiest. Because then you just have to give up on everything. Like, the struggle goes on, the Cavaliers go on, and they can continue to root for them. And the other thing is, like, so, I mean, my basketball team, the Iowa State Cyclones, there are some parallels, because also we lost our hometown guy, Harrison Barnes, who's predicted to be next year's number one draft pick. And he had a televised conference, which the whole town of Ames watched. And on that conference, he was like, I'm going to North Carolina, you know? And we were like, holy shit, we lost our hometown guy. And what makes it worse for us is nobody gives a shit. Like, if you're in a small market, if you don't even have a professional team, then the national media doesn't even care. So this is really what I'm getting at. Cleveland is, at least somebody cares. The only thing worse than, like, heartache is if, like, you get your heart broken and nobody even gives a shit. Like, everybody gives a shit. Whereas no one gives a shit about the Iowa State Cyclones, and there's nothing more important to me in the world of sports. And, like, everything that makes people love sports, all of that, I still embody that. But then, like, the third point is, like, that drives me crazy is people are like, well, what's even the point of rooting for a team that's not going to win a championship? Like, isn't that the worst thing ever? And I'm like, how can you compare one person's joy to another person's joy? The delusion of, like, the Yankees fan is like, oh, I always win. My team wins because I'm like, no, you're being exploited, man, just like the rest of us. You know, the Yankees win, like, you're a champion. You're not a fucking champion. You're getting dicked over at your job. Like, everyone's getting dicked over your job. You're getting fucked over. Like, the reality is that we are, like, as a Cyclone fan, that I'm, like, a fan of the oppressed people. And that's what my team represents, is oppression and the struggle and the underdog. Like, we all are, you know? I mean, shit, the President of the United States is still a fucking underdog. I mean, he's not in control. Anyway, so there's a lot of great things about rooting for a team that doesn't win all the time. And, like, that's the other thing is, like, so when I beat, you know, when you're rooting for a champion, right, you need that team to win, like, 90% of its games. So either, like, have, like, smug satisfaction of winning or utter destruction. Like, that's your thing. Like, if the, you know, if the Yankees don't beat the Indians, like, fuck, they're fucking morons. But if they win, of course they should have won. Well, as, like, a fan, like, why want that paradigm when I can have, like, the crazy paradigm of, like, I have the possibility of, you know, total victory, David and Goliath. Like, I can, you know, win by revolution, insurgency.